5, 6, 7, 8.
Welcome to Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl. I'm your host, Kimberly Schmidt, but I simply cannot do this alone. So I have my husband, Jay Schmidt.
Hi, guys.
And our baby, Alex Fisella.
Jazz.
To talk about the 2002 Chicago movie. Hooray.
Or the 2002 movie, Chicago.
Okay. Yeah.
It's the way you said that was like the Chicago movie.
The Chicago movie.
Well,
because it was a thing before it was a movie.
Yes, but yeah. Because it's a proper pronoun, it sounds like you're like, it's any movie shot in Chicago. The Chicago movie.
we're doing every movie shot in Chicago in 2002.
Or it's like it's like there was like a cursed show in Shakespeare that took place in Chicago.
The Chicago movie.
And so it's it's the Chicago play. instead of saying it.
All right, we can talk about the Scottish play.
No, thank you.
Okay.
Nay. Not
well,
on this podcast.
Here we are. We're back. We're talking about Chicago, the musical, the movie. I'm just going to say it differently each time to annoy you.
No, I know.
And
I'm letting you do it. I earned it. I get it.
Great. Alex, has Baby met world at all since we last spoke?
Baby's met some world. First of all, I've been working on my musical some more. I wrote a song that was explicitly a Hair parody that I'm very proud of.
A parody?
Yes, it was. I was proud of it because I think I nailed the thing I like best about Hair, which is the bass line is very funky and the guitar chords are in minor. And that kind of is the charm of Hair to me, is that offset. It was always cool. Working on the jokes, I've been going in, like I said, it's a parody of a movie that takes itself super seriously. So I'm going in to the script and I'm just writing jokes in between and then sending them to my co-writer, like kind of harvesting jokes, and we've been doing the Zoom screen shares and working on it. That's fun. I sent another song to Jay and he liked it.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, it needs to be a little bit faster and a little rockier, but it's very good.
Thank you.
That's what you get an orchestrator for, bud.
Yep. And then I did another musical theater podcast called Broken Broadway that will be out in October, and it was on It's a Plane Superman.
Huh.
And this was hosted by my friend Pat Riley, who is a big musical theater fan, who I knew during like the before times when I was a hater. And he opened the episode by putting me on a very tasteful amount of blast, because apparently I've been mean to him about it.
Oh no.
Yeah, I was like, because he goes, I've been holding this in for like 5 years. First couple of times we hung out, it was at a comedy show I was running in a comic book store, and I had Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson playing, and you said, what is this band? It's really cool. And he went, it's a musical. And you went, ugh, musicals suck. I mean, I guess Grease is okay. And I was like, oh no, my sins, they've come back to haunt me.
Yeah,
oh, think about that sentence now.
Man.
I know.
Oh, no, it's so upsetting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm also glad you did It's a Plane, It's Superman on that show, because we ain't touching that one with a 10-foot pole.
I was going to bring it up today.
Oh, well, you can bring it up, but we're not going to, like, go...
In a different discussion.
I do not want to be forced to listen through It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman.
Is it not good? I've never listened.
It's not great.
The music, honestly, he played me three songs. Two of the songs I didn't hate, they just don't scream, this is a story about Superman. They sound like Bye Bye Birdie outtakes.
Yes.
They're competent songs, but...
It sounds like Bye Bye Birdie about Superman. That's exactly what it sounds like.
Didn't they write it?
Probably.
Yes, they did. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Bye Bye Birdie, what my textbook in college called the first rock musical.
Wrong.
Yep, that's apparently where it started. I have the cradle will, the book called The Theater Will Rock.
Oh man, that is like incorrect.
As Jay put it in our first episode, if Bye Bye Birdie met Hair, Hair would casually offer Bye Bye Birdie Coke in the bathroom and Bye Bye Birdie would narc. It is not the first rock musical.
Yes.
I feel like that's kind of the plot of the Hair movie. Isn't he, like, Claude is an outsider in the movie that, like, happens upon them in the park.
I haven't seen it.
If I'm remembering that correctly, I could be very wrong. It's been 10 years since I've seen the Hair movie.
Yeah. any world? No.
We physically went out to dinner last night.
We went to dinner. So that's, yep. We did that.
We had a Blockheads margarita, not at the Blockheads in the theater district, but it still felt a little nostalgic.
Okay. Yeah.
I guess.
That sounds good.
Have we done anything else? Oh, I watched a bad musical.
Oh, do tell.
There's a Pride and Prejudice, the musical, is streaming on Prime, which mm-hmm. is what started my week of Jane Austen.
Man, she really went down a rabbit hole.
It's the guy that wrote Daddy Long Legs and Jane Eyre.
Which we like Daddy Long Legs.
Love Daddy Long Legs. This was his first attempt without his book writer.
Ah.
Book, music, and lyrics all by the same guy, which a lot of times is not the wisest choice.
Cats.
It works sometimes, Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just like, no one was in the room to say, that's not a good lyric.
Cat.
Yeah. So there were just a few songs that I was like, this isn't good. Why did you do this? But I watched the whole thing, and then I immediately started watching every Jane Austen good miniseries and thing I could get my hands on.
Every time I came home from work, she was there watching a new Pride and Prejudice, and it was a staggering how many Pride and Prejudices there
one
are.
One was Sense and Sensibility.
Oh, okay.
Wow. I almost imagine it like an Into the Spider-Verse where like all the Prides and Prejudices can meet in some kind of crossover.
Yeah, and the zombie one too.
Yes!
The zombie one.
We can watch that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's it. I was craving. But what it made me really nostalgic for is like going to see a new musical and like the subway ride home.
Talking about it.
And my favorite thing to do is to see a musical that is, it's not my favorite thing to do to see a bad musical, but what's one of my favorite things about seeing a musical that is not yet great is I like to go home and tell my friends all the ways it could be fixed.
Well, yeah. I mean, even when we see,
even if I see a great musical, I'm like, they could tweak this. They could.
Well, a lot of times I would rather go see a show regardless of it being good or bad. At least if it fits with you.
Yeah.
And we don't like a show. The conversation on the way home of like, here's what I didn't like and why, and here's how we fix this show, is way more fun.
It's part of the experience.
It is as fun as seeing a good show.
Yeah.
Totally.
I know. It's so fun. I was texting Kevin after I watched this Pride and Prejudice, and I was like, if they just asked a woman her opinion, if they just musicalized this instead of this, if they decided if it was a rock score or not, like, they were good things.
Oh, no. Last World. Because of the show that we're doing today, which, by the way, I thought we were doing just the whole Chicago musical, not just the movie, so I have over-prepared.
All right.
I went down a rabbit hole listening to Cabaret on a loop.
Okay.
And also, I've been fixated on Cabaret kind of since we did it, because I don't know if there is a better musical as a metaphor for the era that we are in politically right now. So I went on just over and over and over again going like, oh, this is exactly what happened in our lifetimes, you know? And especially I got stuck on listening to Tomorrow Belongs to Me on a loop. Yeah, yeah. And first of all, two things about Tomorrow Belongs to Me. One, I found out that real life Nazi Richard Spencer was talking about how much he loved it, and Fred Ebb's family had to be like, hey, Nazi, you know this song is A, about how Nazis are bad, B, written by a gay Jew? Shut up. two, as my Spotify tends to do, it gave me another song after it to listen to, and after Tomorrow Belongs to Me, it suggested You Got Trouble from The Music Man. I was like, yeah, Nazis are death.
Yeah, sure.
You Got Trouble.
Okay.
Yeah, so it kind of works.
Yeah. Fraud Wasted just did a movie episode on Cabaret, so we also touched on the fact that it is an eerie watch in the current moment.
Yeah, and I like that movie, but I like it so much less because I think the story is just not as good as the show story.
1,000% agree.
Yeah, like it's, and I don't even know why they, what?
That's also shot weird.
The cinematography in that movie is a nightmare.
A little bit.
Absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
I watched 15 minutes with Kimberly and I was like, I gotta be done. They have a whole shot where it's Liza Minnelli's face in 1/8 of the shot and the rest of the shot is a yellow lampshade. And I don't understand what they're going for. And is that the point I bring up every time we talk about it now? Yes. But it's like, it burned me that bad.
Okay. It's a good movie. I just think that the Sally Bowles drama where they're with this rich other couple, like it just isn't as interesting as, uh-oh, everyone we liked so far was a Nazi, and it's too late to back out. And I just think that's a lot less cool of a reveal. And it just feels like, you know, it's just, it's a good movie. It's just not as, it's a weird choice to just change the story entirely, I think.
Yeah, well, and we can get into this another time, but I thought so too, and like researched it, and it's because it's based on a book.
Yeah.
And Fosse just liked these other stories better in the book. And so he took the musical and he's like, but I'd rather do it about these four people.
Oh.
And just changed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because he's cool.
Gotcha.
I don't know. Won him an Oscar. Anyway, is that all the world we've met?
I think so, yeah.
Yep.
I think so, too. Our word of the week, kind of.
Word of the week, kind of.
Encores.
Encores.
But not the encores as in just coming out and singing another song, but City Center, the encores series.
Before we move on to the encore series, can I just pause it?
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about this, you two feel about this, but I hate it when they start singing again after curtain call.
Me too.
Because I'm like, we already clapped for you. Show's done. Can show be done? Now we're all standing and you guys are singing and like doing like another little song and dance and you're all clapping along and I hate it.
I like it when it's a Megamix.
Nah, Megamix should be, no, that should be before the bows.
That's actually true. Or is the bows.
Yeah. I just hate it when I'm like, cool, everyone bowed. It's great. It's awesome. And then they're like, oh, Waterloo. And I'm like, no.
It's always Waterloo.
We need to be done.
No matter what the show, it's always Waterloo.
Yeah, we need to be done.
Is it Les Mis? It's Waterloo.
There's like, you've broken a contract here.
Yes.
Drop the fourth wall for the bows. Show's over. I don't know.
Yeah. I believe the actors on stage would agree with you.
Yeah.
They probably won't go home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless it's like one tiny little like melodic sting just to close
da,
it again.
Da, da, done.
Yeah. I'm good with that. Like Waitress does that and it's perfectly tasteful.
Oh, that's true actually. And it's cute. And like the kids come out.
Yeah.
They leave you with a touching moment.
So anyways, encore. Sorry.
Anyway,
sorry.
That's an actual encore. The Encore City Center series is a series where they present musicals in concert. And they're shows that you don't get to see very often. And they perform the entire original score as written. It's sort of the main concept. Is that they're not changing anything, nothing crazy. They are presenting the show as it's written down on the page.
Yeah.
They usually do a weekend of performances after 2 weeks of rehearsal. And so you'll see, actually, a lot of people now will memorize, but when it first started, when I was first seeing the shows, everyone had a binder in their hand.
Yeah.
And I think they still at least have to touch the binder a few times
it's
to make it
the
right contract.
Oh, wow.
Or else they're, because if you are requiring it to be memorized, then I think you need more rehearsals.
Yeah.
So they can't actually, so they have to like touch the.
It's basically it's an organization sort of, but also like a producers group that they basically are, they've taken upon themselves to be historians of the American art form known as musicals. Like they revive shows that would probably never be revived. They're putting out shows that like people are never going to see again. And it's more of
shows that maybe have never been recorded.
Yes.
So you can't go get the cast album.
It's still producers. They're still like selling tickets and stuff. It's still show business, but it's with more of like an academic bent to it.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's almost inviting you to analyze the show as a historical artifact and think about why it was never brought back, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not like,
it's almost like going to like a table read of a pilot that didn't go.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Like it's, you know, it's falling away and then being brought back for this is part of the presentation of why you're seeing it, and you're supposed to look at it through that lens.
Yes, like I have seen one or two encores pieces and I'm just like, this show is too long and this plot is wackadoo. And then I'm just like, oh, that's why no one has seen High Button Shoes in 15 years.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's because of that. Also, where are the shoes? I don't know.
And they're high buttons.
Yes.
But the interesting thing is that, like, I feel like the presentations themselves, the production value has definitely upped in, like, the past, like, 10 years.
It's really, really been up, like, upping their game.
Because there are a lot of instances where a show gets revived by encores and people go, oh, this is actually really good. And then they have been transitioning to Broadway.
Yeah.
Okay.
From what I can tell, it's only happened 2 or 3 times.
Finnegan's Rainbow.
So the very first one, so the Encore series started in 1994.
So it's not that old.
No. But in 1996, they did Chicago. Or it was the 9th show of their series. So I think that would be like the 3rd season. They did Chicago, and it got like crazy good reviews, being like stripped down and just a concert. And that is why it still looks stripped down and like a concert. Because that's basically what they did with 2 weeks of rehearsal at Encores. And Ryan King reset the choreography from Fosse. They did the concert. Everyone loved it. Went to Broadway. Hasn't left. Oh, excuse
me. Yeah.
The next one was Finnegan's Rainbow.
I actually liked that show.
I didn't see it.
It was fun. They have a leprechaun in it. And like, nobody says anything. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, sure. Like...
And then they started in the early 2000s, the Encore's Off-Center series for off-Broadway shows that either never made it to Broadway or are also lesser known, which is where we got the first Broadway production of Violet.
Yeah.
Jay's favorite show.
I love that show.
It's so good. They also record all of these, and they are at the New York Public Library on tape. Okay. So you can go watch them. So they are very much just like a living history presentation almost of just like, this is this show, and this is what this show sounds like live, and this is what this show looked like. And they generally are not making any sort of like conceptual statement.
Yeah.
They're presenting the show as it would be.
They're presenting the source material first as opposed to interpretations of it. I mean, they're obviously, because they're performing it, there's going to be some, but it's not like a director taking a vision. It's like, okay, here's what the material has to say for itself.
Yeah, exactly. And every once in a while, they'll put like some, not a crazy spin on anything. But usually that is because they're like, have limited set pieces and like have to make do. My favorite encores that I've ever seen was Merrily We Roll Along, obviously, because I love it so much. And they did do a cast album of that production that I highly recommend. Lin-Manuel Miranda played Charlie Kringis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Did you know that?
Yeah, I didn't know that, actually.
And he did Franklin Shepard.
Yeah. Yes. That's how I know, because I've seen the Franklin Shepard bit, but I haven't seen the rest of it.
Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, it was later than the early 2000s. It was 2013 they started the Off-Center series, which is how I finally got to see A New Brain, an album I'd only ever like heard and worn out in college. And then I was like, I can see A New Brain? So that's why I think Encores is so cool. Because it's like all of these shows that are kind of lost to time that no one's really producing because either they're hard or they're tricky or just no one wants to see it.
I do love we're going to do a thing lost to time, because usually if something is lost to time, it will drive me crazy if I want to see it. So it's like, oh boy, that a thing that might make my brain be in less pain if I like a thing that's gone forever.
Yeah, but also at the same time, when it comes to musicals, more often than not, if they're lost to time, there's a reason. Definite reason why it's lost to time.
More often than not, yeah.
Yeah, high button shoes is weird.
Yep. Mm. Here's the thing.
Why are the buttons so high on the shoes?
Yeah, I love...
talk about the shoes at all.
I love this. But when, you know, musicals are like a very finely tuned motorcycle.
Yes.
If you nail it, it's awesome. But you miss like one screw and you're just, and you're all over the pavement.
What I think is so interesting about Chicago coming out of Encores is that it did not get good reviews in the 70s. And then the Encores production got like raves and was moved to Broadway.
Yeah.
And so it's so interesting that you can just sort of like revive interest in a show, but also like you're showing a show that not a lot of people liked in the 70s to the audiences of the 90s, and like all of a sudden it resonates.
Yeah.
Because it just needed to be picked up and put in a different decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an element of if something was before its time, it gets to have a second chance to be of the time it was written for, by accident, of course.
Yeah. And they have done It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman. I always say Spider-Man.
I would have rather seen that, although we did get Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, which kind of is that, so.
When will that come to Encores?
Ooh.
How
many Spider-Men will get their backs hurt again?
I don't know. They have to do it with a book in their hand, too, so. At the City Center. I also love Encores because I love overtures and the orchestras on stage. And so, because it really does feel like a concert. So,
how big a room are these happening in? Because I was imagining
something small. At City Center, which is...
Oh, was that on 43rd Street?
No, I think it's on... I want to say it's on 46th.
It's on 55th Street.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah, it's on 55th between 6th and 7th.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking of Town Hall. That's.
Oh, you are thinking of Town Hall. That's on like 43rd.
So I don't know if I've been to City Center, so I don't have a...
You may not have. It's usually... It does a lot of dance pieces when Encores isn't there,
mm-hmm.
or they'll do concerts. It's a 2,257 seat Moorish Revival Theater.
It's a beautiful theater.
It's gorgeous.
It's really pretty.
Okay. If they have to touch those binders, how much like moving around is there in these shows? Is there any semblance of choreography, or are they all just taking it as if it's a table read?
Either or. It depends on the director. It depends on the show. If they're doing a dance show, they're not touching binders and they are dancing.
There will be a lot of dancing.
If they're singing, maybe there's a music stand off stage, right? And they like pretend to look at it every once in a while.
Okay. They're working into the choreography where they just kind of tap the binder every so often as part of a hot kick. They're
particularly choreography light. Like if a number really like demands it, or if it like won't be the same without it, they'll have it. But it's not as like in when they did, what's the Grand Hotel. Like they choreographed the champagne number and did like a lot with that, but like the rest of the show was not.
I didn't really see Grand Hotel.
I saw it on YouTube, like highlights from it.
Yeah. I started going to see stuff at Encores in college because you could get a pretty good student discount ticket. I don't even know if it's a student discount. I think there's like two balconies and the one balcony is like $40.
It's an affordable night at the theater if you're going to go.
Yeah, it's great.
It's not Broadway prices. It's actually, it's cheaper.
It depends. Sometimes
it is. Well, it depends on who's in it.
Yeah. The most recent thing I saw at Encores was Evita, which I think was their gala this year. So every year they'll also do like a gala production because they're, I guess they're a nonprofit, or they just like to ask for people's money, so they do a gala with that has more production value and thus a higher ticket price, and there's usually some sort of big name in that one. But that that was a cool directorial choice in that production of Evita, because they had a teenager playing teenage Evita, and then they swapped her out for Solea Pfeiffer. Oh,
cool.
It was really cool, and they both sang the shit out of it.
Yeah,
I got into Evita right after that thing closed. So every time I would see it on a bus, I was mad. I was just like, oh, I find out I like this thing right after it leaves the earth. Damn it.
The production that got canceled was like in rehearsals and got canceled was Thoroughly Modern Millie.
I don't know if we needed encores of that.
I wasn't sure. I think a lot of that was they were going to tackle rewriting the Chinese subplot.
Okay.
And Ashley Park was Millie.
Okay. That makes sense. That tracks.
They were sort of tackling rewriting that script a little and presenting the changes.
Interesting. Okay.
Also, Janine Tesori was in charge of off-center for a little bit, I think.
Okay.
She was not CEO, whatever it's called.
The artistic director?
The artistic director. Correct. That is City Center Encores. I highly recommend. They do a lot of YouTube highlights that you can watch from old shows. And as soon as we can be inside of a theater again. It's one of my favorite things to see in New York. Yeah. Even if it's a show I don't like love, but like Carmen Cusack and Call Me Madam was great. That yeah. show's weird, but it was Carmen Cusack and I love her so much.
Yeah. And you kind of, when you see those shows, you kind of feel like you're part of the it feels like you're part of the creative process a little bit. Like you kind of see,
you can peek behind the curtain a
yeah,
little.
You see the strings a little bit.
Yeah. Everyone has, you know, people flub their lines because they've only had 2 days to learn them.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah, that's it. I just recommend going to see City Center Encores.
Yeah.
And then its most successful offspring was Chicago in 1996, which transferred to Broadway, which hasn't left Broadway, and which boasts the title of the longest running American musical in Broadway history, because Phantom of the Opera is a British musical. Mm. And that's how they got it. That's how they made themselves a title and put it on the marquee. And I think that's fun.
Yeah, you got to find an angle, baby. You got to find an angle.
Yeah, if that show taught you anything.
Gotta get a gimmick.
Yeah, faith pretty much.
Gypsy. Oh, the Patti LuPone Gypsy was also Encores.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
They did like a summer series for a while and it was in that one.
Okay.
It's very cool. Anyway, Chicago, we can transition right there. We can talk about the show as a whole, too. Do you have any personal histories with Chicago?
I saw Chicago last year, and my seats weren't great. We were in a pocket. We could see just fine, but we were in a pocket with kind of, like, a little bit bad sound, so I was kind of straining to hear the dialogue for what the songs would mean in context. And I had fun. The dancing is really cool. The cast was really good. We did have a pretty daring stunt cast in that Roxy was played by a Japanese TV star who was not great. But the stage door was packed, so I assume it was a good business decision, but not the greatest choice for the star of your show. But everyone else was really rad.
Was really bad?
Rad.
Oh. I just said that, but everyone else was really bad.
It's like, oh, no worries, she wasn't great, but everyone else, worse. No, they were all good.
Really rad. Okay. Yes. Jay, do you have any personal attachments to Chicago?
Chicago is one of the first shows I ever saw on Broadway.
Really?
Well, I came in with my aunt and uncle to see Phantom when I was in fifth grade, and then the next time I was in New York was in high school. And the night before, we saw Thoroughly Modern Millie, the original cast. And then the next night, we saw Chicago. And here's the thing. I actually truly adore Chicago as a musical. Seeing Chicago in high school as someone who was considering going into the arts was actually a very important show for me to see in that, I don't know, Alex, if you've, like, and I feel like this in comedy, too. Like, you know that time when you, like, go to a stand-up show and you're, like, thinking about getting into it and you haven't really done it yet, and you go to a stand-up show and you realize, and some of the people just are not totally on their game.
Okay.
They're funny enough. And you're like, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah. Okay. This is not unattainable. Yeah. That was Chicago for me.
Okay.
I did not.
Who was your cast? Do you remember?
I can't F if I know. Yeah, I had a good time because the songs are, it's maybe one of my favorite songbooks of any show. Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, okay, this is not on a pedestal as high as I think it is.
That's kind of how I feel about it too, and I'll get into that as we go on, but.
Yeah. I have never seen this on Broadway. I saw it on tour when I was in middle school, probably. And then this movie came out when I was in middle school. And I loved it so, so, so much. I thought it was very...
Yeah, I saw this movie 3 times in the theater.
I think I did too. We saw it a lot. It was very good.
And if I'm being honest, watching it this morning, like by myself with my cup of coffee, it like started and I was like, oh yeah, I love this movie. I was like, oh yeah. Oh, I was like, I listened to the score a couple days ago. I really should probably, I got to watch the movie. We got to record the show. And then as soon as it like, ba-da-ba-da, I was like, yeah. I was like, come on, man. Come on, Tay. Bring her up. All right.
It's so good. We can talk about the show as a whole. It started in 1975 on Broadway. It was Gwen Verdon's idea. She brought it to her husband, Bob Fosse, in the 60s, and they couldn't get the rights until the woman that wrote the play died. And then it took them 6 years after they got the rights for it to actually happen, which makes sense. That's about how long it takes to write a musical.
Yeah.
Get it to have enough money to be on Broadway.
I didn't know it was Gwen Verdon's idea until we watched Fosse Verdon, and we watched that entire saga unfold.
Okay.
Have you watched Fosse Verdon yet, Alex?
I have not.
That would be...
I think it's time.
Fun. I think. Okay. I think you've earned it. You're ready.
You know enough to know to get the references.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. I mean, we can do like a watch through and like add that as a segment. Like, what do you think of season one
I'd
episode
like
four? Because I have
plenty of other homework, Kimberly.
Then I'll stop watching Jane Austen and we can watch Fosse Verdon.
All right.
The Fosse Verdon stuff about Chicago was so interesting because I really didn't know much what the original production looked like. And I don't think I knew it wasn't a show from the 90s until I was in college.
Okay.
I was like, oh, Chicago's from 1996. And then I was in college and I was like, Chicago, 1975? What was that about?
Did it look less like stripped down than the 90s one because that was how it started? Because the if I can describe what it looks like in the room, seeing the new, I mean, not new, from the 90s, is it stripped down, but that its level of stripped down is everything is mesh and glitter and stuff. So like stripped down is a relative term here because
everyone just happens to be wearing black, but
yeah, but like, you know, the ensemble will not change costumes, but there'll be a lawyer or a reporter, but it'll be them in their mesh coat, which really works. But so was the original production more elaborate or?
Yeah, more elaborate and more literal.
Let's put it this way. I think this is something I was texting Kimberly about this morning. The original production was like set in its time and place,
mm-hmm.
and then mapped the vaudeville on top of the time and place. Whereas the Encores revival set itself in a vaudeville and then mapped all of the locations on top of that.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Kind of.
I'm trying to figure out another way to say it. It's like the concept of it being a vaudeville performance is present the entirety of the 1996 revival.
Okay.
The original production is more like the movie. Like you're watching
reality
and then it kind of cuts to
like
vaudeville number when they sing.
They're always in their vaudeville outfits, like being a lawyer. Whereas in the original production, it was a bunch of lawyers wearing suits. You know what I'm saying?
I see. Okay.
I don't know if that's true. I've never seen the original production.
At least that's the way it was in Fosse Verdon. They were all wearing their little outfits.
That's true. We didn't see much of it in Fosse Verdon.
A couple of shots.
Okay. They have the cool tap hats at the end, which I think stayed.
But in my
opinion, it was not well reviewed in the 70s.
It was not. Which is shocking to me.
Well, if you think about, and I don't know much, but from what I'm gathering is that from whatever time politically, socially was going on, it was not a time that the audience wanted, quote unquote, the mirror held up to themselves. And it was very Brechtian in that, like, they were breaking the fourth wall and calling attention to like the celebrityizing.
Celebritizing?
Like celebritizing criminals and like just the idea of celebrity being bad and all of that kind of culture. That audience didn't want to see that.
Okay. Oh, we hadn't quite learned that the darker side of that.
Hadn't quite learned the lesson. Where in the 90s, I think with like, I don't know, supermodels and crate and tabloids and all of that had really started. I think people were more apt to, and there had been the OJ trial.
Oh yeah.
And I think in the 90s, there was more of a more recent touchstone of a famous trial and everyone watching. because there were a few of those in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many were in the 70s that were to that extent, like, made someone famous.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. Famous, yeah. I don't know how long the genre of true crime has been successful, but it definitely had a heyday in the 90s, and that would feel like an appropriate era to do a true crime show about true crime shows, essentially. That the crime in it is treated as if it is a sideshow, much like it has become reported on, like, in real life when that happens.
I think it's also, if you look at the way New York was in the 70s, I don't think people were wanting to show up to a theater in New York to see a show about people shooting each other when people were shooting each other in the streets of New York. Like, it was a much more...
Glorifying criminals that way.
They're, like, glorifying violence in a way that, like, I don't necessarily... I think maybe, like... I'm only speculating, but,
Yeah.
But I could see that being true as well. It also opened in the same season as A Chorus Line. And so A Chorus Line just, like, swept them up with the reviews and awards.
And it's also a show that, like, embraces the reality of people's lives and, like, the, like, more subtlety of things. Whereas Chicago's kind of, in a, I think, personally, in a good way, a little bit of a cartoon.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it kind of, it almost reads like a comic strip.
And that just may not be what people were looking for.
Yeah. No.
They were looking for, like, a piece about dance is dancing on a line. That was 90 minutes with no intermission. Maybe that's all they need.
Man, man. I love 90 minutes, no intermission. Every time. Come on now.
I think when we see theater come back, I mean, everyone already loved a 90-minute no intermission. But I also think, like, safety sake, it seemed like it's probably better to just be like, sit down and leave.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Don't mingle again and then sit back down.
That's a good point.
Thank you. I'm full of them. I like making points. I like points.
And how?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, the 96 revival, very well received. Everyone very much enjoyed it. And then we get the movie in 2002. And then we get various movie and television stars in the production forever.
Is that when the stunt casting started?
Think or Couple maybe years. Even before because it maybe. Had already been out 8 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it really, really like.
Yes.
I've read some of the people they cast. I'm like, this is a little irresponsible to cast.
And I think they're fully aware that they're doing that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they are. But
unapologetic.
I don't know if the audience is fully aware that that's what's happening, but
they should be. It's pretty clear.
Yeah.
In Forbidden Broadway, do you know this song?
No.
Give him the old star replacement.
Yeah. And like give him the B stars. Like it was just, they had the whole song about making fun of Chicago with all of their star replacements. And I think that song's from like 2005. So
it's
like,
still evergreen, baby.
They know it.
Still funny.
They're doing it. And, you know, that's just the way some producers' brains work. Look. They're like, we need a boost in ticket sales. This person has 25 million Instagram followers. Can't hold a tune, but put her in black and throw her on stage. Like,
yeah, man. Look, I mean, you got to keep the lights on.
And it works. And, like, it works, and you're keeping hundreds of other people employed by keeping that show open.
And
there
also,
are people in that ensemble that have been in that show for decades.
Yeah, and it's not like you're not going to get criticized from the New York City theater community because the New York City theater community already saw the show 15 years ago.
When it was good.
So they're not going again. So at the same time, it's like,
yeah, that's just a show that's not for us.
If it'll get butts and seats, like it'll get butts and seats.
Like butts and seats, it'll give our friends jobs. You know what? Keep it there. Why take? And in some producers' minds too, like why take a risk on something new when this thing is there? It's open. It's consistently making money.
Yeah.
Done. Yeah. So I have a love-hate relationship with a stunt cast.
Yeah.
But the more I think about just like people having jobs because no one has jobs right now. That's everything. Just like give 100 people a job.
Yeah. I mean, it works sometimes though. I really wanted to see Wayne Brady in Kinky Boots. I didn't have the money at the time, but I really wanted to go. I was like, that sounds awesome.
I heard he was good.
I'm sure he was.
He was also in Chicago.
Yeah.
I would have seen that too.
He was Burr in Chicago. I mean, not in, in the place Chicago, not in, in not Aaron Burr in Chicago. Chicago
the in musical. The Chicago musical.
Yeah. It didn't make sense, but it was cool.
Shut up. Don't you make fun of me. Let's talk about Chicago, the musical, the movie, the film.
Okay.
I love it. I was very happy to revisit it. In my mind, if I think of Chicago, I just think of like shiny dresses and costumes dancing around. And so then when I think of the 96 revival, I'm always like, oh yeah, it's not that.
Yeah.
Also, I think the movie is one of the best casting of stars in a movie musical.
Yes.
Because they are all fantastic.
Yes.
And they all...
They cast people that no one really knew could sing and dance, but they can sing and dance.
It's the one thing that I couldn't stop texting about when I was watching through. Catherine Zeta-Jones gives... She earned every inch of that Oscar. I can't even... She, like, it was the kind of thing where I was like, oh yeah, I'm really curious to see how they like choreograph some of this stuff to get some of these folks out of the center of the frame. And I was like, no, I was like, she dances in front and center all through Cell Block Tango. And I was like, this girl is dancing for, and the fun thing is that at the very end, you can kind of like, you can see Renee Zellweger has put a lot of work into learning this choreography, but I was like, just watching the two of them, I was like, it works for the character of Roxy because she's not as seasoned, but yeah. I was like, Renee's doing okay, but Catherine has those moves in her soul.
Yeah.
Like she, like all of her extensions are per, I was just like, she, so good.
And I think that also works, like you were saying, for the character, because I think it's pretty heavily implied that, like, Velma is a vaudeville person to her soul. Like, she is an artist who committed a crime. Roxy has dreams of being an artist, but she's just sort of okay at singing and dancing. Yeah. That is,
and
that's
then
why
now
she's so...
her taste of fame.
Yeah.
In the papers because she killed someone.
Yes, and that's why she won't let it go, because she knows that she can't... She can't do it alone, if you will.
Yeah.
And she just wants to be famous.
Yeah.
By any means necessary.
But we all know the best casting in this is John C. Reilly as Amos Hart.
He's
flat out
so good.
He's so good.
In this movie.
Like,
he is just, he breaks your heart at every turn.
He's so perfect.
His voice is also so cool that even when he's like, I was listening to the soundtrack on the way back from work this morning, and like, even just when he's, like, talking over, like, she told me, Amos, help me.
Yeah.
And it's just like, explain his voice. I just, like,
John C. Reilly as Amos Hart, it's the kind of performance and the kind of casting in a movie, especially for a musical, that, like, all the other roles were well done, but, like, if you were to go see a stage play, like, other people could, like, achieve that and maybe do it differently and better, but, like, as far as I'm concerned, John C. Reilly has like salted the earth for that. Like, it's just like, it's the kind of thing where it's just like someone else does it and they do a fine job. And I'm like, yeah, but like, they already nailed it. Like,
I was surprised to see on the cast album from the 90s that it was Joel Grey, who I normally don't think of as like playing a sap. Like, normally he plays a cool person, but it worked. He was good. But I was like, that's not who I would think of to play that role at all. I think he'd be more of a Billy Flynn, but.
Oh, I bet he was great.
Yeah, he's good on the album.
Sappy songs.
Yeah, he's got the body type. I think he can, like, as far as stage stuff goes, I think that tracks. Like, John, like, if you had to have a camera on Joel Grey doing it, I think maybe you're right. But I think when you're a little bit farther back.
Okay. Yeah.
He also, like, embodies a sort of vaudevillian and the Fosse kind of style of movement from his work in Cabaret.
Yeah.
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 But I think, but
John C. Reilly is perfect. Richard Gere is perfect.
And at the end of the day, I think the reason the movie did so well and it is so very, very good is that they set it in the accurate time and place, which I think makes Chicago work way better from the go.
Mm-hmm. They hook you with reality. And then the opening sequence.
Oh my God. Because Because they add, and this one of the things that I think is so good about this movie, and one of the reasons why it is one of the better musical adaptations, is it adapts the story and it suggests things to the story that are better than are in the show. Like having Velma show up freshly from committing her crime and going into her double act.
It's so much better.
But she's communicating to the stage like guy, like, yeah, she's not here. Just follow me and I'll do it. Adds so much complexity to that number. That works real. It's a great opening because it sets the tone in so many different ways perfectly.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so good. Cause it also like, it shows you like the reality of the world, the reality of an actual vaudeville act.
Yeah.
And then the heightened reality of like what she's imagining.
Yeah. It goes through them so seamlessly that, you know, you see Cell Block Tango and they're dancing their brains out, and then it cuts to them playing cards and smoking and going like, yeah, and Bernie loved to pop. And it's like, and you go, oh, all these songs are metaphors that are heightened, and it totally works because it's all about people who are kind of delusional.
Yeah. But also all the transitions into all of the vaudeville stuff it's just so well done. It's always very subtle, but also like clear and present at the same time. Like,
yeah, the metaphor they're making is always clear.
It's just like,
Queen Latifah.
Yep. Just,
it's so good.
But also, I mean, for a movie, I think for a movie that's shot as like a, with some stage elements, sometimes that goes south. And I think, I mean, Rob Marshall just is so good at shooting a musical number.
Yeah.
Like We Both Reach for the Gun it's just like, oh, this is the kind of thing where it's like, if you tried to actually do this on stage, like with all the strings, it would truly be a nightmare.
Yes.
It would truly be like, they couldn't do it. But for a movie, you can make that work for a movie. And with him being up there with the ropes, I was like, this is so good. This is so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was also, as we learned from Fosse Verdon, that was the original intent, was for it to be a marionette. And then when Gwen wasn't dancing it right, he made it a ventriloquist act instead.
Oh, it's funnier as a ventriloquist, though.
It is funnier as a ventriloquist, but he initially was having them all be marionettes.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
And then too hard.
That's interesting.
It was in Fosse Verdon. Who knows if it's true, but I liked it in Fosse Verdon.
Oh, that is right. Yeah.
Yeah, remember? And then she was too
real
old.
Mad. She was real mad.
She was real mad. Well, it took too long to get the
rest. That whole show is just them being real mad at each other.
Yeah.
That's marriage, am I right? Oh, what a journey we just went on in that laughter.
I know, it's fun. We have fun here.
Oh my God. Do we have any little loves about Chicago?
I have many. Taye Diggs is awesome as the announcer. He's perfect. But also, I think the way that they fit him in to, like, the announcer is all of his parts are still in the movie script, but they just put him in certain places. And like, he is oftentimes the transition in such a unique way every time that I think is really, really fun.
He's the connective tissue between scenes.
It's really, really small, but the fact that the water dripping on the faucet is like the beginning part of Cell Block Tango is rad. My only little gripe is that Mary Sunshine is not a dude in drag.
Yeah.
I'm kind of okay with that being gone. I don't know what that's really saying.
No, I just know it's an old vaudeville trope, and so.
Oh, okay.
It's also because you can sing it.
Yeah, I would love to be Mary Sunshine at some point, but the whole joke is that he sings it in falsetto. It's a countertenor that plays Mary Sunshine, and she sings it up here, like, you know.
Okay.
That's always, I mean, I always like seeing that. This movie had Maya in it.
Maya was great.
There was a Maya performance. That's always a little love. I guess like my last little love is just, this is so stupid and small and dumb. Richard Gere's coat is very good. It's a good, we has with like the fur, you know, when he first comes on, it's a good coat.
It's like the coat that you must wear to properly say the words, that's Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be wearing that coat, otherwise it won't work.
Yeah. And also, yeah. Richard Gere's face when he's doing the tap number, that whole sequence is really good. We all know that Richard Gere's really not doing all that tapping, but yeah. As an actor, he's really showing you that he's actually doing it, even though he's really not. You know?
Yeah.
You follow?
I follow.
I was like, yeah, I believe he's doing it. I know he's not.
Yeah.
Those are my little loves.
I concur with your little loves, and I add my pretentious love.
Okay. Oh, this is a new kind.
Yes, but not for me. These are always mine. My pretentious love is the cut scene. They cut the number class from the movie.
Oh, that's right.
But you can find it on YouTube, and it is wonderful. And apparently in the 70s, Fosse censored some of the lyrics because they were too crass.
Yeah, I read some of them. They were rough.
And then for the movie, they cut the song, but they added those lyrics back in.
Yep.
That's my little love. And then what does she say? Are you sorry? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Alex?
Okay, I'm going to do my loves and then I've got some gripes. Okay. So first of all, this is my love from the stage show. That it always opens with a voiceover going, you're about to see a tale of sex, murder, booze, and corruption, all the things we hold near and dear to our hearts. And I know it's cheesy as hell and basically designed to make like tourist moms go, oh, but I love it anyway.
Yeah.
If anything, I love it more because of that. Like, I love how they choreograph what's the number? I Can't Do It Alone. Velma Kelly doing her double act just as one person, and mainly for the reason that some of those moves look so cool and some of them look so dumb, like the I don't know what to call it, but the way you're pretending to like run in place but you're waving your hands and like
trenches.
Yeah, when you're doing that, and it really drives home the point.
There.
Nothing.
Don't laugh at me.
I'm just enjoying you. You just lit up like a Christmas tree when you knew that term, and it's very sweet.
I like trenches. They're fun.
Okay.
They're fun to watch when like the entire ensemble is doing.
Yeah.
Trenches. When it's one person, it looks weird.
Yeah. So what I think that, and so the whole show, and I'll get to why I think that this point gets muddy, but the whole point of the show Chicago is like everything you do now for fame will be over and before you know it and whatnot. And I think that having Velma do dance moves that look super cool and super dorky, but at the time you know it's meant to be taken as all that super cool and dangerous looking, drives some of the fact that it's like, oh yeah, all these characters, their dangerous world is parodied now. Like, we think that a lot of what's going on is silly, but to them it's like, gangsters do this, you know, but to us it's like, oh yeah, we've seen that in a million like Family Guy sketches or whatever. I love the way they handle the Hungarian woman being hung. And it's great in the show, the way she gets on the ladder and it flips around and then the rope comes down. But in the movie, it's so good because they intercut it with her being a ballerina going up on the ladder like yep. It is in the stage show. She's in her normal costume in the stage show, but like doing the up the ladder as if it was done from the musical to her just like praying a rosary. And then just it's so cool. And I do love the fact that she has a story arc, that it is heavily implied that she really didn't do it, that all the other ones are saying like, yeah, I didn't do it, but if I did it, they deserved it, dot, 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 because I did it. But like, she really didn't do it.
She did not do it.
Yeah. Cell Block Tango is the best song in the whole show. It just is. It's, yeah. I think, so on the, now that I've said all my loves, and first of all, like I said, I love Cell Block Tango because it's the best song. It also elucidates Velma Kelly's arc because she's a part in it and she's not even called attention to. She's just part of giving her story in that. And the way they intercut it with them just shooting the shit around the prison, it not only sets the tone of, it doesn't only work as a number, but it also sets the tone of like, oh, these are all gonna be dream sequence dances, basically. And so my thing about Chicago is I think it is a collection of some of the most awesome and some of the most aggressively okay songs that I've heard. And like, Cell Block Tango's rad. All That Jazz is rad. Razzle Dazzle, I don't really like that much. Class is fine. And two, I think that Chicago is the most baller presentation of a story that doesn't really interest me that much. And I don't like saying that because the premise is really cool, but like, its narrative, it undercuts itself so many times. Like, we know the baby's bullshit from the jump, so there's no tension there. We know, you know, Mr. Cellophane's a great song, but like having it be because he's resolved to divorce Roxy, then he kind of, it doesn't, and it's always kind of implied that he won't, I think, at the end. So like, I feel like Act Two is kind of a mess in a way that doesn't live up to the promises of Act One. And also, like, the end nowadays is a good song, but having Roxy Hart and Velma Kelly, when the whole thing is basically implying kind of a, as I'm fond of pointing out, a who lives, who dies, who tells your story, like, all this happened and you have no idea because it mattered to them, but it doesn't matter in 50 years. They even say it. But having the show end with like Roxy going, but they don't care about me anymore, is a really cool way to end that story and really brings that arc. But then she just becomes famous in a different, or not famous in a different way, but like she's okay because they do this double act. And I would be okay if they made a choice to show that this is like their last ditch effort to be famous, and like, oh, this is sad that they're like, look at us, we shop it. And it is a little bit, but I feel like it's still treated as a triumph. And so it kind of, I think Chicago gets in its own way in a lot of ways, and I find it really frustrating. And the movie does a lot to fix that, but also some things I think it just can't fix.
Yeah.
Sure.
I all of your points are completely, that is totally, damn it, Alex.
You're all correct, but I'm like, okay.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, for me personally, I truly think that Nowadays is the best song that Kander and Ev ever wrote. And for me, it just, that song at the very end of the show helps me overcome, yeah, you're right. They shouldn't win the win at the end. It kind of has a little bit of an Evan Hansen vibe where it's like, so no consequences? Okay.
They're trenching through a window.
I was like, here in Evan Hansen, it's easier to remedy because he's in high school and he didn't murder anybody, but you know.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Every time I hear Nowadays, I just kind of like tear up a little bit. I think it's just a really good song. It's so simple.
I just don't fully get why Chicago's been around forever and Cabaret has not. I think Cabaret is better.
I agree. I like Cabaret better.
I like Chicago better.
Yeah, that's true. You do.
Okay.
I think that
it's an easier story.
It's an easier pill to swallow. It's an easier night at the theater.
There are no Nazis.
Okay.
Cabaret is it's
way more political.
It's way more political. It's way more. It's a more important show. I'm not here to say it's not more important, but I mean, like, you know, sometimes you just want to go out. If you're coming to New York and you're gonna have to pick between the like, the Nazi drama or the like fun time, you know, 20s murderers. You're going to go fun time 20s murderers most of the time.
Yeah. Cabaret, like you said, is not a cartoon. It is hyper real.
Yeah.
Chicago is a cartoon and that's part of its charm.
Yeah. There's a certain menace to Cabaret, which is part of its appeal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I will say this though. The interesting thing to me is that I find all of Sally's songs in Cabaret to be not great Cabaret songs. Like Mein Herr is just, in my opinion, just I was like, I wouldn't want to watch someone sing this on stage. I just don't care. Whereas like All That Jazz, I was just like, yeah, now this is the song you sing in like in a theater or like a cabaret kind of situation. I was like, this is a show, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. 20s versus 30s.
All That Jazz is just
that's All That Jazz.
That song is such a banger. I'm sorry. It's eternal.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's probably a reason that was the one song I knew from Chicago before I had.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
The one I knew. And I didn't even know that well, but I knew the.
Yeah.
The
I'm just a sucker for Chicago. Like, just it starts up. Wah, wah, wah. I'm like, yeah.
All right. Really overture.
My actual was love great. Is just the close up on Tay Diggs. A 5, 6, 7, 8.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, I got goosebumps. You're just doing that.
The overture of the show is, it really needs to be there. It sets up everything. Like, it's so good. It's so good. And it's also tastefully short. But yeah.
Tastefully short.
It's tastefully short.
You know?
And 90 mind minutes. You, I'm just like, oh, 15-minute overture. How luxurious. Yeah.
Oh, did I, side Baby Meets World, have I told you I finally made up my mind how I feel about overtures?
No. Do I want to know?
No, it's not bad.
Okay.
I like them, but I usually only really like them the second time around because I love a show. I love an overture because you hear all the melodies, but they don't sound as cool to me until I've heard all the context. And then once I re-listen to it, I'm like, oh, this sounds iconic now. Like, oh, it's that thing. And then this is how it's melding together.
So you like an entr'acte.
I like an entr'acte. But I love an overture provided I mean, okay. If an overture is rad, I'll like it no matter what. But I will sometimes feel a little bit like, okay, when's this going to be over? Until I go back to it. And then I'm like, oh my God, all the stuff I love. And it's like a teaser now.
I totally agree with you. Like, my favorite overture is My Fair Lady's overture because it does a very good job of, it's almost like it's an amuse-bouche for the show.
Yeah.
I love that show. But when the overture like really kind of like plays the hits in a fun way. And it's just, oh yeah, we're going to hear this song. Oh, and then we're going to hear this song. Isn't that fun?
Yeah, I can't wait.
That's I forgot about that one. That one's going to be fun as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also,
it just helps if I know the song.
Stop wasting 10 minutes and just get to the show.
Unless it's the superstar one, that one shreds.
Bathroom. Yeah.
Is there a review?
There's a review. Okay, this is from Live Love Hogwarts.
Oh, okay. And
subject is 10 out of 10, 5 stars. Everyone, please leave Broadway Baby 5 stars and a nice review. It really helps our numbers. We'd appreciate it. And this says, I really like their voices and Broadway. I would recommend this to one of my friends.
Just one?
That's what I love about it. It's like, that one. It's fine.
Just one.
Only one of her friends
Robert,
will also like
Robert, my
her.
Friend Robert.
No more, no less.
What does Harold do in Chicago?
If it's the movie, he better get out entirely. If it's the stage show, if it's Cell Block Tango, he better get out. If it's Razzle Dazzle, I'll let it slide.
Cool. Yeah. He's just got to leave. Yep. You know, got it in one.
Although I think if he's seeing the 96 revival that's still on Broadway, he's not the only one whose phone is ringing.
Oh my God. What if they stunt cast Harold in Chicago? Who would he play?
The little man we've created.
Who would he be?
Robert Duvall. I'm pretty sure he's dead, right?
No, he's not.
He's not?
I don't know.
No, Robert Duvall's alive.
Robert Duvall.
Is who plays Harold?
Yeah.
I meant what if you put Harold in Chicago? Brooklyn.
Oh, I thought we were stunt casting a Harold to sit in the audience.
So. I'm picking up what you're throwing down, though.
I went with Robert Duvall.
You got it in one.
All right, my friends, sing out, Louise.
Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum, the name on all of Broadway's lips is gonna be Baby. The fellow raking in the clicks is gonna be Baby. I'll be a podcast celebrity, that means somebody 5 people know. They're gonna sing along with me when I am singing out Louise. From just some cynic little prick, I'm gonna be Baby. Who says podcasting's not an art? And who, because his story's sad, could use it as a launching pad? Broadway Baby Pod. Boom, ba-dum, boom, ba-dum, boom, boom. Ba-dum, bum, ba-dum, bum, bum. Boys, they're gonna wait in line at Broadway Con to meet Baby.
Baby.
Think of those autographs I'll sign. Good luck with your podcast, Baby. And I'll appear in a silk sequin diaper shining bright to the back of the room.
Wow.
You're a fan, they're a fan, everywhere a fan, and we'll call that the baby boom. Oh, I'm a star, and the listeners love me. And that's because everybody's got something they regret not trying when they were a kid. And sometimes you get a second chance, and sometimes you don't. But that's showbiz, baby. He's giving up his sad boy life. I'm gonna be, sing it!
Baby!
He thought they'd jeer, but they applaud. And all my haters will burn in hell to see me high-five Lin-Manuel. Broadway Baby Pod. Do 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 do.
Ba-na-ba-ba-na-ba. Yeah, man, it's just when everyone sings Chicago songs, it doesn't matter if you change the lyrics. I just bop in my head, having a great time. I love it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Chicago Theater is proud to announce a first. The first time anywhere there's been an act of this nature. Not only one little lady, but two. You've read about them in the papers, and now here they are, Chicago's own Killer Dillers, those scintillating sinners, Roxy Hart and Val McKelly.
You can like the life you're living. You can live the life you like. You can. Grand, isn't it great? Isn't it swell? Isn't it fun? Isn't it? But nothing stays. In 50 years or so, it's gonna change, you know.
Let's make the parties longer, let's make the skirts shorter. Let's all go to hell in a basket.